Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Karen Lynn Greenberg joined the English department at Siena College in Loudonville in the fall of 2012. Well, since then, her story collection, Faulty Predictions, won the 2013 Flannery O'Connor Award for short fiction and was published in the fall of this year by the University of Georgia Press. The stories in Faulty Predictions take place in locales as diverse as small-town Ohio, the mountains of western North Carolina, and the plains of Kansas. Siena College professor Karen Lynn Greenberg provides insight into the human condition over a varied cross-section of geography, age, and culture. Her work has appeared in the Antioch Review, Bellevue Literary Review, or Bellevue Literary Review, if I actually enunciate every syllable, North American Review, and elsewhere. It is a great pleasure to welcome Karen to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks very much for having me here.
It's very nice to talk to you about this collection. Tell us a little bit about the Flannery O'Connor Award and how that comes to be. This is sort of the this is the Oscar for short stories, isn't it?
It's a award that does have a long history. Every year, two collections of short stories are selected and published the next year. So it's a contest where people just send in entire manuscripts of short stories and goes to some judges and they go through it and then send it to the series editor and then she picks the top two every year.
And that's interesting because with this comes publication.
Right.
Because otherwise... No, right?
right. I mean, it's really hard to get a collection of short stories published. So for me, I started thinking, you know, let's go the route of these contests, you know, that are sponsored by university presses and small presses that are really supporting the short stories, you know, the idea of short stories and getting short stories out there.
Why? So let's talk about that. Why do you think it is difficult to get them out?
I think it's a marketing thing. I think that people buy novels more than they buy short stories. And I think that a lot of the bigger presses, you know, are looking at what's going to sell. And I think some of the smaller presses are thinking, you know, this is an art form that they want to celebrate and they want to promote. And for me, I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful for University of Georgia Press, you know, for putting this book out, but also just for all the, you know, the great collections. This is a, you know, an award series that I've been reading for years and years before I even thought of submitting. So I think it's great to have these collections of short stories out in the world every single year. Two new ones come.
I know I've talked about this with many short story writers of the thing that I can't figure out in my Joe brain is we seem to have less time. We are at a faster pace. You would think short stories would be the perfect antidote to that, right? That you would say, oh, I can sit down, I can read really good writing, and I can have this in one short burst. And yet, that idea seems to be the marketing of it, and it all gets down to that, isn't it?
Right,
bad marketing.
Right.
Is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going back to Poe, he says the idea of a story is something you can sit down, you can read it, and in one burst, and then you're done with it, right? And you're right. I think this idea that people keep saying, well, our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. The best I can make of it is people say, you know, they can kind of fall into the world of a novel, and then you can stay in that world, you know, come back into it,
right.
Read a novel for a week, 2 weeks, whereas a short story, you have to start over again. You know, you sort of have to do the work of falling into that world, and you might stay in that world for half an hour, but then you turn the page, it's the next story. You know, once again, you're starting over again.
So are you someone who has found great comfort and a artful kinship with the form of short stories, or are you regularly thinking, okay, this could become the novel?
I think for me, I'm most comfortable writing short stories. I write short stories. I teach writing short fiction. It's just a form that I study and I look at. And so and there's a certain satisfaction also for you finish something, you know. I mean, it might take a few weeks, it might take a few months, but you finish something. Whereas a novel, you know, can take years. I mean, I worked on a novel and then ultimately decided it just wasn't working. You know, all sorts of writers talk about their novel in the desk drawer, and I have one of those, you know, and that took 4 years to figure out this goes in the desk drawer. Whereas with stories, you know, if a story doesn't work, well, maybe that's a month of your time as opposed to 4 years of your time, you know.
When they work, mm-hmm. and you put them together in a collection, is there, because there's an art to that in and of itself. I know I've talked to George Saunders about this. Mm-hmm. There's an art to just putting those together into an order,
right.
for the reader to digest.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that, you know, I've thought about more and more lately. This is a contest I've actually entered many, many times, and I've entered other contests as well for collections of short fiction. I started entering in 2006, and when I first started, I just had this idea, all right, if a story's been published in a literary journal, it goes in the collection. I just shoved all these stories in there. And then I've been thinking more and more, you know, you want stories that feel cohesive in some way, you know, and that could be because of geography, because of theme, because of types of characters. I think these stories in this collection, for me, it's a lot about voice and tone. They feel like they fit together. They all have some sense of humor in them, even though they're dealing with kind of serious topics. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of time spent thinking about what stories go in, what stories don't go in. And then, you know, after I'd won, I spent quite some time with the series editor talking about order, too. Mm.
Short stories, poems, poetry. It seems that what we as, I would even say consumers, marketers, and even lowly talk show hosts try to find a theme. And we'll say, oh, okay, well, what is the theme? So when you say faulty predictions, is there a theme here? And what I love about this collection is that it is wonderfully diverse. I don't know, at least from my view, there doesn't seem to be a bang you over the head theme.
Right.
But maybe you as the writer and artist would think differently. I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking theme. I think next time I probably should think theme, because
it makes it a little easier.
Yeah, I think it's a little harder to sell when you don't have a theme. But you know, as I was thinking about the titles for the collection, I wanted to use one of the titles of the stories. And I went through all my stories and thought this idea of faulty predictions with sort of characters who think they know their lives are going to turn out one way, and then the story, something happens or some sort of twist, something kind of goes a little bit wrong or something is unexpected. Sometimes what's unexpected turns out to be positive and a good thing. So I would say this idea of, you know, characters have their expectations thwarted in all the stories.
When that idea of being thwarted, and I can see that, does that equal disappointment?
I don't think it always does for the characters. I think that, you know, for example, one of the stories in the collection is called Prized Possessions, and there's a grandmother, and she wants her family to be a certain way, and she realizes through the course of the story that they're not, but they still support her, and they still stand up for her. And so I think the sort of that prediction of, you know, I can only get along with my family if they act this way is thwarted, and it's still, I think it's a story with a happy ending. So sometimes, yeah, disappointment, sometimes not.
And we are... How do you feel about the reader, in the sense of, do you think about that of how we want things resolved, of resolution, of what we want from a story? Not necessarily that everything has to have a happy ending and they all
right.
live happily ever after,
right.
but that there is some sort of resolution and not a dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think since this book has been published, I've heard from different people, and some people have said, you know, there's some stories that have more open endings. And some people have said, you know, those stories don't feel finished yet. And then other people have said, you know, I like that story the best. Like the last story, there's these two sisters who've been fighting, and then they go, they climb out the window together at night to go kind of have this adventure. And it ends right there. And so some people have said, I love that, you know, sort of get a sense that it's something positive happening and the sisters are maybe mending their rift. And then other people have said, what's going to happen? What's the next step? You know, so I think from reader to reader, it really varies.
When you are teaching this, mm-hmm. and you're teaching short fiction, do you share your work with the students as an example?
I don't, because I think it can put them in a little bit of an awkward situation, you
yeah.
know, even if you're looking at it very much just towards craft. I mean, I think some people like my work and some people don't. And I think if you have a student who just doesn't appreciate what you're doing or just, you know, isn't interested in your piece, I think it puts them in a really awkward position. And I think when you're bringing in work that's been published by other people, they can feel free to say, you know, this is what I see as not working. Whereas I think if you're the teacher and you say, here's my work, puts them in kind of a tough spot.
I understand that. Well, although I've also heard it described as, okay, but I'm showing them so they get an idea of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I mean, one of the things I think that's been interesting is since this book has been published, definitely had some students who've gone and found my stuff and have read it and have come talk to me about it. But I think, you know, as of now, I haven't brought my stuff in. But now that I think my work is more readily available, I probably should keep in mind the idea that they can track it down if they're interested.
It's not like it's sealed
away.
It's
not a secret anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
It's out there.
Yeah.
Do you think, and I realize this is a difficult question to answer, but when you're teaching this and you look, and I think the same can be said about journalism. I even teach a course in radio and, you know, you think, oh, all right, you know, you send these kids out into the world and are they good? You know, are they going to be as lucky as I am to get a job in radio?
Right.
And how many are out there? How many are out there in journalism? And how real are you with them as to, all right, you know, you do this because you love it, not necessarily you do it because you love it. You do it because you have to do it, not because you're going to become a millionaire.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I try to be pretty realistic with them. You know, I have some students who will say, well, I want to be a writer. And I say, and what else? What else are you going to do to pay your bills, right? And I try to explain, you know, Stephen King, J.K. Rowling, those are people who can just be a writer. But yeah. I say, you know, look around. Look at, you know, your teachers who are writers, you know, and who are teaching, you know, probably because they love teaching, but also because you can't live off of just being a writer. So I try to be pretty realistic with them. Every year, some of my colleagues and I do a talk about graduate school in English and kind of what comes afterwards. And we kind of describe the difficulties. And I see the eyes getting really wide and, you know, students getting a little scared. But I think it's important for people to know before they kind of jump into something.
Were you ever at that scared point? I mean, in graduate school, were you in that scared point?
I never was, I think, because I was kind of uninformed and naive. And I think in some ways that was probably the best thing, you know. I
mean, blinders on and
yeah,
move
yeah.
forward.
I mean, in a way it was good because all I cared about was just writing and making my writing better. And I wasn't too caught up in the idea of, you know, I want this job or, you know, I want things to go this way. It was just very much for me, I'm going to write this particular story and make this story the best I can, which I think is good in some ways. But then also I think... it's good. I think my students are much more aware. And I think the internet, there's so much more information out there now than there was when I was in school. And, you know, talks like the ones my colleagues and I give just make students aware of what's out there. So I wasn't, and probably good that I wasn't, because I probably would have gotten a little nervous about things.
Right. And that's why I wonder about, because sometimes you... this is what I worry about. And maybe this is unfounded and just says a lot about my weird character. But the thing I worry about is that the fear will somehow have an impact on the art. That a fear will keep you from, because then that becomes a blockade. It becomes a concern that somehow impedes you sitting down and writing the story you want to write.
Yeah, I mean, that is something I worry about, especially, you know, when I do talk to students, when I talk to young people about this. You know, if somebody had told me kind of what my path would have been before I went to graduate school, I probably would have been panicked. I mean, I went to graduate school in Pittsburgh. After that, I moved to Missouri, taught there for 2 years as a lecturer, moved to Ohio, taught there for 3 years, moved to North Carolina, and then finally moved here. This is my first tenure track, first permanent job. And I mean, it took me 6 years of moving around the country to get to that. It took me just years and years and years of submissions to get this book published. I mean, so sort of this idea of, I don't know how hard it is, I think kind of becomes daunting when you think about it. But that's why I tell my students, I said, just don't worry so much. Don't worry about like 10 steps ahead. Just worry about what you're working on right now.
And that's why stories like yours are so great. I mean, your story as to how with this prize and with the collection coming out, that it's very, good news for
right. It can be done.
It can just
take a long time.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Just keep at it.
Yeah.
Karen Lynn Greenberg's story collection is Faulty Predictions. It won the 2013 Flannery O'Connor Award for Short Fiction. It was published this fall by University of Georgia Press. Karen, I wish you all the luck in the world. I thank you so much for sharing with us, and it's great to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.